Chapter 75. Science. Thus sang the magician, and all who were present went like birds unawares into the net of his artful and melancholy voluptuousness. Only the spiritually conscientious one had not been caught. He at once snatched the harp from the magician and called out, "Air! Let in good air! Let in Zarathustra! You make this cave sultry and poisonous, you bad old magician. You seduce, you false one, you subtle one, to unknown desires and deserts. And alas, that such as you should talk and make ado about the truth. Alas, to all free spirits who are not on their guard against such magicians. It is all over with their freedom. You teach and tempt back into prisons. You old melancholy devil, out of your lament sounds an allurement. You resemble those who with their praise of chastity secretly invite to voluptuousness." Thus spoke the conscientious one. The old magician, however, looked about him, enjoying his triumph, and on that account put up with the annoyance which the conscientious one caused him. "Be still," said he with modest voice. "Good songs want to re-echo well. After good songs, one should be long silent. Thus do all those present, the higher men. You, however, have perhaps understood but little of my song. In you, there is little of the magic spirit." "You praise me," replied the conscientious one, "in that you separate me from yourself. Very well. But you others, what do I see? You still sit there, all of you, with lusting eyes. You free spirits, where has your freedom gone? You almost seem to me to resemble those who have long looked at bad girls dancing naked. Your souls themselves dance. In you, you higher men, there must be more of that which the magician calls his evil spirit of magic and deceit. We must indeed be different. And verily, we spoke and thought long enough together ere Zarathustra came home to his cave, for me not to be unaware that we are different. We seek different things even here aloft, you and I. For I seek more security. On that account have I come to Zarathustra. For he is still the most steadfast tower and will. Today, when everything totters, when all the earth quakes. You, however, when I see what eyes you make, it almost seems to me that you seek more insecurity, more horror, more danger, more earthquake. You long, it almost seems so to me, forgive my presumption, you higher men, you long for the worst and most dangerous life, which frightens me most, for the life of wild beasts, for forest, caves, steep mountains, and labyrinthine gorges. And it is not those who lead out of danger that please you best, but those who lead you away from all paths, the misleaders. But if such longing in you be actual, it seems to be nevertheless to be impossible. For fear, that is man's original and fundamental feeling. Through fear, everything is explained, original sin and original virtue. Through fear, there grew also my virtue. That is to say, science. For fear of wild animals, that has been longest fostered in man, inclusive of the animal which he conceals and fears in himself. Zarathustra calls it the beast inside. Such prolonged ancient fear at last becomes subtle, spiritual, and intellectual. At present, methinks, it is called science. Thus spoke the conscientious one. But Zarathustra, who had just come back into his cave and had heard and divined the last discourse, threw a handful of roses to the conscientious one and laughed on account of his truce. "Why," he exclaimed, "what did I hear just now? Verily, it seems to me you are a fool, or else I myself am one, and quietly and quickly will I put your truth upside down. For fear is an exception with us. Courage, however, and adventure, and delight in the uncertain, in the unattempted. Courage seems to me the entire primitive history of man. The wildest and most courageous animals has he envied and robbed of all their virtues. Thus only did he become man. This courage at last became subtle, spiritual, and intellectual. This human courage, with eagle's pinions and serpent's wisdom. This, it seems to me, is called at present. Zarathustra, cried all of them assembled, as if with one voice, and burst out at the same time into a great laughter. There arose, however, from them as it were a heavy cloud. Even the magician laughed and said wisely, "Well, it is gone, mine evil spirit. And did I not myself warn you against it when I said that it was a deceiver, a lying and deceiving spirit, especially when it shows itself naked? But what can I do with regard to its tricks? Have I created it and the world? Well, let us be good again and of good cheer." And although Zarathustra looks with evil eye, just see him, he dislikes me. Ere night comes, we will again learn to love and laud me. He cannot live long without committing such follies. He loves his enemies. This art knows he better than anyone I have seen, but he takes revenge for it on his friends. Thus spoke the old magician, and the higher men applauded him, so that Zarathustra went round and mischievously and lovingly shook hands with his friends, like one who has to make amends and apologize to everyone for something. When, however, he had thereby come to the door of his cave, lo, then had he again a longing for the good air outside and for his animals, and wished to steal out. Chapter 76. Among Daughters of the Desert. Segment 1. "Go not away," said then the wanderer who called himself Zarathustra's shadow. "Abide with us. Otherwise, the old gloomy affliction might again fall upon us. Now has that old magician given us of his worst for our good, and lo, the good, pious Pope there has tears in his eyes, and is quite embarked again upon the sea of melancholy. Those kings may well put on a good air before us still, for that have they learned best of us all at present. Had they, however, no one to see them, I wager that with them also the bad game would again commence. The bad game of drifting clouds, of damp melancholy, of curtained heavens, of stolen suns, of howling autumn winds. The bad game of our howling and crying for help. Abide with us, O Zarathustra. Here there is much concealed misery that wishes to speak, much evening, much cloud, much damp air. You have nourished us with strong food for men and powerful proverbs. Do not let the weakly, womanly spirits attack us anew at desert. You alone make the air around you strong and clear. Did I ever find anywhere on earth such good air as with you in your cave? Many lands have I seen. My nose has learned to test and estimate many kinds of air. But with you, do my nostrils taste their greatest delight? Unless it be, do forgive an old recollection. Forgive me an old after-dinner song, which I once composed among daughters of the desert. For with them was there equally good, clear, oriental air. There was I furthest from cloudy, damp, melancholy old Europe. Then did I love such oriental maidens and other blue kingdoms of heaven, over which hang no clouds and no thoughts. You would not believe how charmingly they sat there, when they did not dance, profound but without thoughts, like little secrets, like barabond riddles, like dessert nuts. Many-hued and foreign, forsooth, but without clouds, riddles which can be guessed. To please such maidens, I then composed an after-dinner psalm. Thus spoke the wanderer who called himself Zarathustra's shadow. And before anyone answered him, he had seized the harp of the old magician, crossed his legs, and looked calmly and sagely around him. With his nostrils, however, he inhaled the air slowly and questioningly, like one who in new countries taste new foreign air. Afterward, he began to sing with a new kind of roaring. Segment 2. The deserts grow. Woe him who does them hide. Ha! Solemnly. In effect, solemnly. A worthy beginning. Afric manner, solemnly. Of a lion worthy, or perhaps of a virtuous howl monkey. But it's not to you, you friendly damsels dearly loved, at whose own feet to me the first occasion to a European under palm trees a seat is now granted, Selah. Wonderful, truly, here do I sit now, the desert near, and yet I am so far still from the desert, even and not yet deserted. That is, I'm swallowed down by this, the smallest oasis. It opened up just yawning, its loveliest mouth agap, most sweet odored of all mouthlets. Then fell I right in, right down, right through, in among you, you friendly damsels dearly loved. Selah. Hail, hail, to that whale, fish-like, if it thus for its guest convenience made things nice. You well know, surely, my learned illusion. Hail to its belly, if it had air, a such loveliest oasis belly as this is, though, however, I doubt about it. With this I come out of old Europe, that doubts more eagerly than does any elderly married woman. May the Lord improve it. Amen. Here do I sit now, in this the smallest oasis, like a date indeed, brown, quite sweet, gold suppurating, for rounded mouth of maiden longing, but yet still more for youthful, maid-like, ice-cold, and snow-white, and incisory front teeth, and for such assuredly pine the hearts of all ardent date-fruits, Selah. To the there-named self-fruits now, similar, all too similar, do I lie here, by little flying insects round-sniffled and round-played, and also by yet littler, foolisher, and peccabler wishes and fantasies, environed by you, you silent presentientist, maiden kittens, doo-doo, sulika, round sphinxed, that into one word I may crowd such feeling. Forgive me, O God, all such speech sinning. Sit I here the best of air sniffling, paradisal air truly, bright and buoyant air, golden mottled, as goodly air as ever from lunar orb down fell, be it by hazard, or supervened it by arrogancy, as the ancients poets relate it. But doubter, I am now calling it in question. With this do I come indeed out of Europe, that doubts more eagerly than does any elderly married woman. May the Lord improve it. Amen. This the finest air drinking, with nostrils outswelled like goblets, lacking future, lacking remembrances, thus do I sit here, you friendly damsels dearly loved. And look at the palm tree there, how it, to a dance girl like, does bow and bend, and on its haunches bob. One does it too, when one viewed it long. To a dance girl like, who, as it seemed to me, too long and dangerously persistent, always, always, just on single leg has stood, then forgot she thereby, as it seemed to me, the other leg. For vainly I, at least, did search for the missing fellow jewel, namely the other leg, in the sanctified precincts, near her very dearest, very tenderest, flapping and fluttering and flickering skirting. Yea, if you should, you beauteous friendly ones, quite take my word, she has, alas, lost it. Who? It is away, forever away, the other leg. O pity for that loveliest other leg! Where may it now tarry, all forsaken, weeping? The most lonesome leg! In fear, perhaps, before a furious, yellow, blonde, and curled leonine monster. Or perhaps even gnawed away, nibbled badly, most wretched, woeful, woeful, nibbled badly. Selah. O weep you not, gentle spirits. Weep you not, you date fruit spirits, milk bosoms, you sweet wood heart purselets. Weep you no more, pallid doo-doo. Be a man, Sukala, bold, bold. Or else, should there perhaps something strengthening, heart strengthening, here most proper be? Some inspiring text, some solemn exhortation. Ha, up now, honor, moral honor, European honor. Blow again, continue bellows box of virtue. Ha, once more your roaring, your moral roaring, as a virtuous lion near the daughters of deserts roaring. For virtue's outhowling, you very dearest maidens, is more than every European fervor, European hot hunger. And now do I stand here as European, I can't be different. God's help to me. Amen. The deserts grow. Woe him who does them hide.